You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 13th of July 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I had a really wonderful weekend in the company of the very best people you could imagine at the Patriotic Alternative Summer Camp. It was just fantastic, really. The calibre of the people there, the quality of the people and how kind and charitable everybody was and courteous. It was exactly what you would hope for. Basically, I'm sure listeners must have been aware. I must have been up to something since we didn't have any Daily Nationalists on Friday and Monday. And that was because I was traveling. This week, we won't be having an audio insurgency because I haven't had the time to download new music and go through it or the time to record it, which I normally do on Mondays. So the audio insurgency will be back next week, but every other show should be back on Radio Albion. We also have the Patriotic Alternative Book Club and Film Club, which will be joining us, and we will be live streaming them on Sunday nights if you want to check that out live. And we will be replaying that on the stream and publishing the MP3 podcast version of it on Mondays. Back to the camp, we all met up on the Friday at the Rambler Inn, which is a pub that's there in Derbyshire, because the camp takes place in Edale in Derbyshire, which is a really good venue because it's very rural there. You've got all the beautiful British countryside, but you also have a railway station so people can get there from all over the country. Maybe there are some people that don't drive. So there was about 150 of us there in all. I think on the whole, everybody was well behaved. I think there were two people that were badly behaved on the Friday night and they were asked to leave. I mean, if anybody breaks the Patriotic Alternative Code of Conduct, they will be asked to leave. No drunkenness, no racial slurs, no support for violence. If any of that is seen, people will be asked to leave. And I believe these two people were asked to leave because they were making noise at night. And of course, these campsites are frequented by families. It wasn't just nationalists that were there. And these families want to get to sleep. And if you've got somebody that's had too much to drink and is making a lot of noise, it gets rather irritating. And we don't want to be associated with things like that. If you want to go out and have a booze up, then don't do it at a Patriotic Alternative event. A lot of thought and a lot of hours goes into preparing for events like this. I know Mark has spent days working on it, arranging the hike, organizing everything, organizing the campsite, organizing the massive barbecue that was had on the Saturday. On the Saturday itself, there was a 6-mile hike and a 12-mile hike, and I stayed at the campsite, guarding the campsite with the security detail. But by all accounts, it was a wonderful day. You can see the pictures of it where they unveiled a huge banner saying, "We will not be replaced," on the top of Mam Tor, which is a very well-known landmark from that area. They were expecting to come back, I believe, by about 3 o'clock, but it took them a little bit longer to continue the hike than they thought, because obviously they wait behind for everyone. No man is left behind. In fact, there's a picture of Sam Melia walking along the hike with somebody over his shoulder. I'm not quite sure if it's a child or a small adult that he was carrying on right up to the top of the tour. So everybody got back a little bit late, and then it was barbecue time, and each of the regional organizers was responsible for the barbecue, cooking burgers and sausages. And Sam cooked me a wonderful steak, perfectly medium rare, which is exactly what the doctor ordered by that time of day. The evening went on and we had some live music. We had banjos, guitars, a flute, a violin, a bodhram, really good music as well, really good bluegrass music and folk music, lots of cheerful faces. And you could really see that everybody was really glowing from the hike, because it was starting to get a little bit cool by that time, and yet the hikers were still in their shorts where they'd been working up a buzz during the day, climbing to the top of that big hill. And then on the Sunday, I was able to meet up with some people that wanted to meet up with me, and we had a nice time in the cafe, chatting over things, talking about Christian subjects, basically. So all in all, it was a really great time. I met lots of new people. Shout out to Marco and Steve. I've talked to Marco on Telegram, and he organises litter picks in his area. And I met Matt, who is a fan of Radio Albion and listens to all our podcasts. He's lucky enough to be able to listen to the podcast while he's working. I want to say thank you to Oliver for ordering the food at the Rambler. When we got there, you could only order your food through one of these COVID apps, and it actually took us an hour to finally get the food and the first drinks ordered. It was extremely frustrating, and you don't have to do that. It's not a regulation that cafes and pubs can only accept orders on the internet, because I've been to plenty of them where you can just make an order in the normal way. Yet the pub landlord insisted on having this app, which was particularly frustrating for people. And also they refused to accept cash there, something which I find a little bit alarming. Even when paying for a coffee, I ended up having to pay by card. And you can't help but be concerned. What about the elderly who don't really use cards? They like to use cash. What about children who like to save cash up for their piggy banks? How are you going to teach children the value of money and the value of saving if you do away with cash? There certainly seems to be a push to do this. And when I was driving back, I had to stop off to get some food, and I went into a supermarket and there were no cashiers, and you were forced to use a self-service machine in order to put your food through. And normally I would insist on not using one of those, because I believe it puts people out of work. Thankfully, there was a kindly supermarket worker there who helped me to put my items through the machine, as I say, because I wasn't used to having to use them. I also met Ali Cat, lovely lady. She's also a big fan of Radio Albion. I met lots of people, actually, that listen to the content that we produce here. And that's what really makes it worthwhile doing, is when people come up to you and say how much time they spend listening to what we put out here, and how important they feel it is, and how much they get out of it. You know, I'm just really grateful that we're able to serve our community in the way that we do. And I know I'm speaking for all the Radio Albion hosts here. We're very humbled by being able to do what we do, and we do it all out of a sense of duty. It's not trying to make money out of it. I mean, we barely make enough to break even, to be honest. I'm just using my new computer now, which I've bought this year with donations. So if anyone wants to donate, that's the sort of thing that the money goes on, and also the bills, obviously. Doesn't go on paying for us to go on jollies or anything like that. We have to pay for that out of our own money. As I say, on the Saturday, I was at the campsite during the day and met up with security detail, met up with Joe Marsh, a highly entertaining fellow who is the regional organizer for the Wales chapter of Patriotic Alternative, got on very well with him. Also met up with Claire there, who is the regional organizer for the Southwest, lovely lady. a chap called Rob, who I'd met before, I believe, also from Wales. It was nice to meet up with some Welsh lads. Hopefully I will catch up with them again before the next Patriotic Alternative event. Met a couple of Sheffield lads, Andy Mester and Kinga, so shout out to them. And another lovely lady called Nanu Nanu. She was very interesting young lady, talking about some of the experiences that she has had. She was very, very interested in history, particularly prehistoric history. And then on the Sunday, I had the pleasure of meeting Knock Knock, It's Enoch, and Will Stanley, the banjo player and folk musician. We've played some of his stuff on the Audio Insurgency. These are just the new people's names that I've remembered. Of course, I also met up with people that I was hoping to, that I've met before. Big hello to Aunt Sally. I always end up having a good time with Sally. And also Cornelius was there. Really good to talk to him. Quite an in-depth conversation with him on the Sunday. Good to catch up with Euro from the Absolute State of Britain. He's lost tons of weight. I mean, it's a real achievement that he's managed to do there. I was really impressed. I hardly even recognized him at first. Is that really Euro? But yeah, incredible what he's managed to achieve. Also good to meet with Barclay for the first time, who I believe is the first person to ever actually get all his devices back after being arrested and having all his devices seized by the police. Learning about that was really the feel-good story of the summer, I think, to learn that somebody did finally get all their devices back. I know people that are still waiting 3 years later to get their belongings back from the police after being arrested for activism. Also good to meet up with the Patriarch again, my co-host on Patriotic History on Friday nights. I've met up with him a few times before, and of course he also does the artwork for the Audio Insurgency. So it was just a great time had by all, and I highly recommend people sign up with Patriotic Alternative, get involved with their local regional group, come along to the events. You will meet a great bunch of people, because everybody going there knows that they are bringing what they expect to find, and they want people to have a great time. They want to show what's best about being British, or what is best about being white. There was one chap there with a white pith helmet and a red jacket, so he was sort of dressed up like he was one of the redcoats from the British Empire, and I believe that was quite a sight for people. I saw it from quite some distance away, but I'm sure that must have been exciting for the other campers that were there. I believe when the banner was unfurled, that was quite exciting for the other hikers to see that, and to see this large group of positive, happy, patriotic white people. Just a fantastic weekend anyway, and I've really come back buzzing. And a big thank you also, of course, to Mark, Sam and Laura for organizing it and putting all that work in. Of course, when I got back, the football was on, and normally you would think, well, I would like to support my country. I do support my country. It's rather like during the war, during the Second World War, Oswald Mosley said, well, I'm against the war, but if we have to go to war, then I'm going to fight for my country, because it is my country. And you sort of look at the football and you think, well, I don't know whether I can really support this, to be honest, because as the government keep telling us, 8/11 of the football team are foreign. So how is it actually an English football team when 8 of them are foreign? It doesn't represent England at all. And when you are supporting it, it's like you're lending legitimacy to that, to these multicultural teams that pretend to be national teams. But of course, nation, the very word itself comes from natal, and it means to be related by birth. And of course, that football team are not related by birth. So it was very hard to actually feel patriotic about this, because naturally you think, well, hang on a minute, the team they were playing against, they're much more white, actually. I have more in common with the Italian team than I do with most of the so-called English team. It's like when England played against Denmark. You know, I had to support Denmark because they're my family. They were all white, the Danish team. That's my family that are playing there. Not the people from Africa and elsewhere that are playing under an English flag. So it was hard to get excited about the football, and, you know, part of yourself thinks, well, not just part of yourself, really, because the government pushed the diversity propaganda so hard down our throats, because they were singing the praises of all the foreigners who were in the football team and talking about how diversity was such a big strength. It made you think, well, I don't want the team to win, because if the team win, it would just be insufferable. They would just be going on and on and on about how what wonderful black football players they are, how diversity is such a strength. So it made me want to see them fail, to be honest. It made me want to see exactly what happened, which was, of course, that the black football players lost us the game. And to be honest, it was extremely unfair of Gareth Southgate to put them in that position. The same as it is unfair to put somebody like Diane Abbott in as the shadow Home Secretary. She's not going to be capable of doing the job. And you put her in that position and they make her into a laughingstock by doing so. And it was the same thing with the football. I mean, I'm not a big follower of football. So what I will do is I will quote what somebody in the chat room had to say. This was at 5 o'clock in the morning on Monday morning. This was Varangian Guard. He said, "The abuse the black players are getting is unfair. For 118 minutes, they were sitting on the sidelines and must have been full of nervous tension when told by the political system they had to go on and score penalties to prove the wonderful diversity theory. Can a political establishment be more cynical? I also see another hate crime bill coming along, making it illegal to criticise overpaid and under-talented footballers." And he was entirely correct, wasn't he? It was less than 12 hours after that on the news that they were talking about needing to come up with a new law to prevent people from criticising overpaid and under-talented footballers. And they were talking about all this racial abuse that these footballers were getting. But, of course, really, I mean, it's just to be expected that they are going to be criticised. If the government are going to talk about how great diversity is, and diversity is such a strength, and these black football players are fantastic, and it's because of them is the only reason why we got into the finals, then if they then lose the penalties, then surely people have got a right to criticise them. If the government, if they had won those penalties, the government would have been praising them and saying, oh yeah, diversity is brilliant, isn't it? And therefore, if they lose the penalties, surely it's only right and just that people are going to say, well, diversity isn't so good, is it? Diversity is a failure. You told us that diversity was going to win us this game. And in actual fact, diversity lost us this game. So that was great to come home to that, to be honest. I've got another comment here from Varangian Guard. He says, "They had other players far more capable of taking penalties. It was a political decision. Southgate made a similar gesture in an earlier match when he put a black youngster on at the last minute so he could claim to be the youngest player ever to appear in the Euros. I think Bellingham may have been his name, and he never featured again. It is all BS." And that is exactly what happened. Southgate was trying to virtue signal. There was a white football player, I'm not quite sure of his name, but he takes penalties for his team, and he was offering to take the penalties, but they said, no, we want to put the inexperienced black players in that role. And of course, they ended up with egg on their faces. It's awful that some hooligans started vandalizing things and smashing things up. I did hear from people that were living in the cities that that they had an awful time on the night of the football. That's a great shame. But yes, fun to see that diversity quotas failed so spectacularly at the football. Well, getting into today's news and moving away from the weekend's news, we have another call for reparations. And this time it's coming from Jamaica. Jamaica is planning to ask the United Kingdom for compensation for the Atlantic slave trade in the former British colony, a senior government official said. Well, what do they mean, compensation for the slave trade? Who started the slave trade? Well, it was Africans who started the slave trade. Why should Africans be compensated for that? It was their idea. It was their economy. In Britain and in Europe, we created a system where people were paid with a currency, which was a measure of value. They were paid with a currency, and we developed a system with lords and serfs and peasants. And the peasants were looked after by the lords, and the peasants were expected to go and fight for the lords. And in Africa, they created a system, it's similar in some ways, where they owned people. And when you owned somebody, you had to cover their housing and their food costs and the rest of it. And essentially, you were working for your keep. And that was the system that they developed in Africa. And some of these people that were working for their keep, they were working for their keep because they ended up getting into debt. And others were working for their keep because they had been kidnapped from the neighboring village during a war. And in European wars, we had the same system. If you lost the battle, if you lost the war, then you accepted slavery. That was just it. You then became a slave of the people that had defeated you in war. And what the Africans did, they sold these people that they had defeated in war, and they were paid handsomely for that. And that was the system that they had. And the British people eventually thought, well, this isn't such a good system. How can we stop the Africans from selling one another as slaves? And David Livingstone was one of the main people that came up with this idea. And he said, well, what we need to do is build colonies in Africa and teach the Africans how to make products and teach them how to extract the rich resources that they have on their continent. And if we link these colonies up by roads, then they can sell those products and they can trade with the rest of the world with products that they have created instead of trading in human beings. So the British said, well, okay, that sounds like a good idea. Let's start building colonies in Africa, and then we can put a stop to the slave trade. And that was the reason for colonizing Africa, to put a stop to the slave trade. And then when they did put a stop to the slave trade, the Africans didn't want to stop. In fact, they refused to stop. And the British had to get quite heavy with them to stop them from trading in slaves. Why should Britain be paying compensation for that? If today's African descended peoples want compensation, such as the African descended peoples in Jamaica, why aren't they asking it from the Africans that sold them? Why are they asking for it from the people that paid for them? It's the people that sold them, that were given the money for them. They're the ones that they should be going to for compensation. The British people have already paid through the nose for this twice. And Jamaica thinks that for some reason that they don't need to go to the Africans, they need to go to the white people that in actual fact liberated these Africans from African slavery. Who would you rather have as a slave owner, a white man or an African man? When you look at the way that the Africans treated their slaves, when the owner of the slaves would die, the slaves would be killed as well. Sometimes they would be put in the pot, sometimes they would be used for human sacrifice. They just comparing the two, I can imagine that these black African slaves, in some instances, may have been pleading with the white man to take them, rather than to leave them to the fate of being eaten or sacrificed by the black slave owners. But nobody will talk about this in the mainstream. Nobody will point this out. The Caribbean island nation will file a petition that could seek billions of pounds in reparations pending legal advice, according to Olivia Grange, Jamaica's Minister of Sports, Youth and Culture. Where do they get this from? Millions of pounds in reparations. It's as if these slaves have not already been compensated. When they have been compensated, they were working for their keep. When you look, as I was saying, at this system that we had with the lords, and the serfs and the peasants. The serfs and the peasants would have to go out and work. They would have to go in and get all the food in from the fields. They would have to plow the fields. They would have to get out there and harvest the crops, and then all the crops would be put in a barn, in a communal barn. And when they needed to eat, they would go into the communal barn and they would get their food. And that was their payment. Their payment for doing the work was that they could then share in the food. And you had the same thing here with these African slaves that were working on these farms. That's what they were doing. They were working on farms. They were picking cotton, picking tobacco, picking sugar. And in return, they were fed. They had houses. They were taught, they were given education, they were given medicine. They were still looked after, even when they were too old to work. Their children were looked after in creches. They have already been compensated for the work that they did. They just weren't actually given tokens of value. They weren't given money to spend. And what would have been the point if they had have been given money to spend? What would have been the point in giving them wages? Do you think there were shops back then that they could have spent the money in? There wasn't. I mean, I guess you could say, well, they could have been given, I don't know, a gold sovereign a year or something like that. And I'm sure that the good workers, the best workers, they were rewarded because these slaves would be given time off. And when they had their time off, they could go to the market and they could sell anything that they had created. And when you look at when they actually did away with slavery, the slave owners were very concerned. They said, well, who is going to look after these people if they are not slaves? Who is going to feed them? Who is going to house them? They don't know how to do it themselves. So the slave owners, just out of the sense of charity that white people have, they gave them land, they gave them the implements that they needed so that they could farm the land. They gave them seed. So in some cases, they gave them animals. They gave them all sorts of things to help them to actually make a living for themselves. White people are not mean, nasty people. We do our best to look out for others. So they've already had their reparations. It's incredibly ungrateful of them to start demanding reparations now, 200 years later. Of course, it's because they're goaded to by our media. But to actually have an entire country demanding these reparations when they've already been paid in kind, basically, for working on the farms, and the people that sold them were the ones that got the money for nothing, weren't they? Really, it was the people that sold them that they were the ones that just kidnapped them or won them in war and then sold them on for wealth. The slave owners had to pay a lot of money for them in the first place, about the equivalent of about £10,000, and then they had to feed and house them. So if they're going to go to anybody for reparations, it should be these African chiefs, but they shouldn't really do that, because if they were taught history correctly, they would understand that this was just the system that they had. It was just an institution that they had at the time. The former British colonies of the Caribbean were all involved in the slave trade, but it is Jamaica alone that will be asking for compensation. It comes a decade after the Caribbean Community, a regional organisation, set out to ask for reparations from Britain, France and the Netherlands. I mean, it really is getting a little bit thin now, isn't it? I mean, all they ever seem to do is be holding out the cap and expecting the white man to put things into it. I mean, when you look at the number of Africans that there were at the turn of last century, and you look at the number of Africans that there are now, you can see that they have increased at an exponential rate. And that is only because white people have helped them out. But they're not grateful for it. The more you give to them, the more they want. It was noted at the time that Britain paid £20 million to British planters in the Caribbean, the equivalent of £200 billion now in reparations during emancipation in 1834, but no compensation has ever been paid to the descendants of the victims of slavery. Yes, but when you think about that, that is because these British planters will have paid out the equivalent of £20 million to these African chiefs to buy those slaves in the first place. That's why they're being compensated with that money, because they've essentially purchased some goods And the government are saying, well, you no longer have title to those goods, so you have to buy that title from them. The slaves themselves had already been given their reparations. They'd been looked after all that time. They weren't in a bad way. They couldn't have been in a bad way, or they wouldn't have been able to work on the farms. They had to be well looked after, and it's not like they were chained up or anything like that. In fact, this article actually gives us a description of some of the things that they were doing. It says, once in the colonies, the slaves worked on plantations and inside the homes of Europeans as cleaners, cooks, or other household domestics. And you're hardly going to be doing that whilst you're chained up, are you? I mean, these slaves were trusted with things. They were trusted with children. They were trusted as household domestics. They were not mistreated. Anyway, we seem to be going a little bit over time here, so I think what I will do is continue tomorrow with this discussion here about Jamaica asking for reparations in the slave trade. And I will say thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.